This is Dr. Michael Bricky with Ageless Lifestyles Radio, cutting-edge thinking for being youthful at every age. On each program, I interview experts on what it takes to live longer, healthier, and happier. Our program takes a holistic approach in addressing anti-aging psychology, medicine, alternative medicine, fitness, nutrition, and wellness. Our emphasis is on innovative thinking and practices that have solid data and results. To be healthy, you need to eat healthy food. At home, you know whether your food is fresh and how it's cooked. While one of life's great pleasures is eating at a restaurant, how do you know whether you're getting fresh, healthy, nutritious food? What happens behind the scenes? How do you know if the chef's special is really the chef's best or yesterday's leftovers about to go bad? Is the chef loading the food with lard to make it tastier? Today's guest, Chef Alexander Bernard, knows the ins and outs of the restaurant business and will be our guide. Chef Alexander is head chef and owner of the renowned Alexander's Restaurant in Naples, Florida, and is author of the just-released cookbook, Alexander's Restaurant. In the first part of the show, we'll take a look at what goes on behind the scenes of a restaurant. In the second half of the show, we'll focus on practical advice on how to get nutritious, delicious food that won't clog your arteries and won't add the pounds. Chef Alexander, welcome.
Hello, glad to be here.
Let's say you're on vacation in a city that you haven't visited before, you don't know anything about the city's restaurants, and you want to have an enjoyable meal, but you also are health conscious. How would you go about finding a good restaurant?
Well, if I'm at a hotel, I always go down to the front desk and the concierge and ask for their recommendation. And they particularly ask me what I want, if I wanted, you know, seafood or Italian or continental, and what price range. But then I immediately take that list, depending on what I say, and see if it's a chef owner, independent restaurant. I really feel that a chef owner or an independent restaurant, you're going to get healthier quality ingredients rather than larger chain. That's the first steps that I take.
How would we know if it's independent other than recognize a brand name of a chain?
Just by asking people, the concierge and the front desk, the bellman, those people. I'm a food guy, so I really ask a lot of questions. I don't want to go in and spend my money on something I'm unhappy with, so I really ask a lot of questions, and I think that's what you need to do.
So what other kind of questions would you be asking?
What's the best restaurant in, say, San Diego, if I was in San Diego?
Mm-hmm.
What's the best restaurant? And they say, oh, you have to go here. It's great. It's got sushi. Well, no, I don't want sushi. Oh, what do you want? I want Italian. Oh, this is excellent. You have to try this place. So those are some of the questions I would ask. Or if you are a vegan or a vegetarian, and you could ask what restaurants offer great vegetarian food.
Mm-hmm.
And usually get a pretty good answer there. Now, if you're not at a hotel, well, you'd have to stay at a hotel. Or if you're renting a place, again, you'd have to look in the newspapers, actually, you know, as you're sightseeing, look around and go from there, looking at the menus.
Are there guidebooks that are particularly good?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's the Michelin 3-star and the Zagate. Usually, you can get the Zagate all over in most cities. That gives you ratings of restaurants. And then the Chamber of Commerce. You get any local Chamber of Commerce, and they'll give you a list of restaurants. So there's many ways to get them. And if, again, most people that travel are either staying in a hotel or an inn, and they have all those restaurants there.
Mm-hmm.
But I would have to say, being a chef owner, maybe I'm biased, but I think chef owner restaurants are going to go out of the way to make sure that they have quality ingredients and a lot of fresh and exciting items there.
Mm-hmm. When we go to an exceptionally expensive restaurant, are we just paying for ambiance and presentation, or is the food actually better?
Well, I think you want a little bit of everything, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
I think you want the ambiance to be there, but I really believe it boils down to the quality of the food and service. I think you can overlook ambiance because, like they say, mm-hmm. You know, you can't eat a painting. So I think it really boils down to the food, value, and personnel. But again, you'd like to have the whole package, I think.
How do you know whether a restaurant is using fresh ingredients?
You don't know until you serve the items, and then you can tell. As far as produce, salads coming out with bright, bouncy colors. What I mean by bouncy is they're not limp greens. You know, they're crisp, they're fresh, they're bright colored. You can tell right away. It's just like if you make a salad at home. You can also see the selection of ingredients that they have on the menu. They have lots of vegetables, lots of radishes, and different items on the menu. You can tell right just by reading the menu. So what's listed on the menu, and when it's served in front of you, you can tell if it's fresh, you know, fresh ingredients. And if the menu is really big, you have a real large menu, and they got from a hamburger to a taco to sautéed fish, to they offer everything. You have to be careful there because it's hard to keep that many items fresh. They'll use smaller menus, I think. You're much safer with your smaller menus.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Sometimes you see these menus that are just so big, you say, how can you possibly have all that stuff fresh every day, right?
Right.
You know, unless it's a 450-seat restaurant, and you know they're putting out a lot of meals, I guess it would work. But generally, a smaller menu.
What do you look for when the restaurant posts the menu in the window? You decide from just looking at that whether this is a place you want to eat.
If something appeals to you, I think that's all you can go on as far as that. You look at a menu in a window, it could be totally different when you dine there. But if you see something you like, you have to give it a shot, give it a chance. And also, if you know you go in there and it's 7 o'clock on a Saturday and there's two guests in there, you might not want to have dinner there.
You'll get a lot of attention, though.
You get a lot of attention. So. You know, we were in Boston one time doing the Paul Revere Trail, Freedom Trail, and we were walking, and we got down towards the end of the trail, well, three-quarters of it, it was the Italian end. And the Italian Quarter, I don't know if you've ever been there, there's literally hundreds of Italian restaurants next to each other.
Mm-hmm.
All quaint, all unique, and all different, mainly Italian. And this one street, there was probably 20 restaurants pretty much right next to each other. But this one particular one was just totally packed. So we made reservations there, just not looking at the menu, not looking at anything, just because it was busier than any other restaurant on the street. And we've been back there three times. It's just fantastic. And so there's an indication, but without even looking at the menu, you see one restaurant particularly busy, it's busy for a reason.
They either have great food or great marketing.
Yeah, I'll give it something away.
But the marketing won't keep it up.
That's right.
What the food is cooked in makes a big difference in how healthy it is, whether it's going to add a lot of saturated fat. How do you know what things are cooked in, or how do you pick items that are healthier in terms of how they're cooked?
As a consumer, you have the right to know, and if it's not listed on the menu, you can ask. You know, what does the chef use to saute his fish?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of oil does he use in his dressings? I think it's up to the consumer to ask server, and if they don't like the response, if it's a canola oil or something, in my restaurant, we use a blended oil, and we use extra virgin olive oil, depending on what the items are. If a waiter came to me and said, so-and-so would like to have their snapper sauteed in olive oil, which we get, it's not a problem. We just, not a problem at all. So it's really the consumer's responsibility, unless it's listed on there. And then even, it could be listed on there, and they might not even cook it like that, too. So.
What do you mean by that?
Well, say there's some pan-seared scallops and sautéed and extra virgin olive oil with a balsamic glaze, you know. And then, but they're not using olive oil. They're using canola oil because it's cheaper. They feel, oh, the public's not going to know that. So I think it's up to the consumer to be a little aggressive on that part.
Do a lot of restaurants cut corners?
Yes, I would think so, yeah. They do, because of the economic climate. But, you know, independent restaurants, chef-owner restaurants, I would say would be the best place to go to get a quality meal and be not concerned about cutting corners. I feel strong in that because I know a lot of chefs. We love what we do. Generally, we run higher food costs because we don't feel comfortable otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And we, at our restaurant, just implemented a spa menu here, and it's about 25% of our sales. It's going over very well. Very well, and we're using all different oils, blended oils, you know, no sauces, reductions, vinaigrettes. We say it on a menu, and that's how we prepare it.
And we're seeing more and more restaurants having healthy food options.
Yeah, years ago, if we put a healthy item on the menu, it wouldn't sell. It'd just sit there. That's the truth. But now people are going after all the different things that you do and enjoying it. I just ran a tofu tempura this past week with a salad on a salad with some green apples and green onions and spiced pecans with a sesame vinaigrette, and I couldn't believe how many I sold. It was fantastic.
It sounds good just listening.
Yeah, and you know, but I think a few years ago, if I ran that, nobody would get that.
Aside from the spa menu that you're describing, what are the most nutritious meals at a good restaurant?
Fish. Well, I think we all need protein, and I think you have to have fish. To get that protein, and something that's, you know, down here in Florida, we get great fish down here.
Mm-hmm.
We get all kinds of groupers and snapper, and we serve all our fish with lots of nice vegetables. I would have to say fish and fruits and salads, vegetables would be the way to go, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Stay away from I don't want to say that, but the crispy duck, which I like. But I'm on your show, so. I'll say it. You know, everything in moderation, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everything in moderation. But I should get her on the phone. She she's a real advocate for good health and eating in moderation. But I think most of the time that, you know, you have to have your salad and your fruit and fish most of the week.
You probably have a short leash because I know your wife's a fitness expert and trainer and probably doesn't cut you much slack.
Yeah, you know, she's on me because I like the carbs, you know.
Uh-huh.
I like the, and I have a problem with the pasta and the bread and the potatoes and the, because I use a lot of energy at work, you know, cooking lunch and dinner, and I have a tendency to eat too many carbs, so she's on me on that. But I don't eat too much beef, though. I don't. And my wife, she'll eat a little bit of beef once in a while, but if she has it on a Friday, she won't have it again for 2 weeks or longer.
Other than the obviously fattening foods, are there foods that's not a good idea to order at a restaurant?
Not a good idea?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I think it depends where you go. And a restaurant depends on your condition. I mean, if you have a perfectly healthy person and you're not overweight, I think you can order anything. If you have, you know, some concerns with heart, a little bit overweight, of course you want to stay away from the bread and the butter. You're probably better off to stay away from the meat. So I think, I'm not a doctor, but I would think it depends on what your diet's like and what your health's like.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that frustrates me is they bring out the bread right away, and it's just sitting in front of you.
Yeah.
And it's so difficult not to reach for it and start munching on it and load up on the carbs. Is it okay to ask the server to bring something else instead of the bread?
Absolutely. How about a crudité?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Some raw vegetables?
Mm-hmm.
If somebody did that at my restaurant and they said they don't want the bread, they would like to have a little bit of crudité. Not a problem. The problem is that I couldn't just do that because I would hurt my market, you know. Go out of business.
Mm-hmm.
My doctor tells me all the time that I should open a vegetarian restaurant. And actually, he just started a cardiac clinic, and he's receiving my spa menu to give to his clients to come over and have dinner on my spa menu. So that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty good. But, yeah, if you came to my restaurant and asked for crudité instead of the ciabatta bread and the whipped butter with chives, we would give you that. Absolutely.
What a pal.
But you could also ask for a little olive oil.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if, you know, too much of that is not any good either, but a little bit better than the whipped butter.
If a person frequents a restaurant a lot, how do you get to know the chef? Like in the movies or something, a first name basis with the chef comes out and greets you and that kind of, I think a lot of us have that kind of fantasy. How does that come about?
Patronize a restaurant and you like it, you could ask to meet the chef.
Mm-hmm.
If you say the food is so great, and if you really mean it, and if you like that, the waiter will tell the chef, and like they do with me, and I come out and meet you, and then we'd chat. And then normally when I get to know somebody, I tell them that if you have any special requests, let me know. I've got one tonight. I got a special request tonight. Mrs. Selsby comes in all the time, and her niece is coming in, and she's a vegetarian. And she asked me, my niece is coming in tonight for dinner, and she's a vegetarian. I said, is she a vegan or a vegetarian? She said, no, she's just a vegetarian. And I said, well, I have the portobello mushroom entree on the menu, and I have a vegetarian pasta on the menu, or I could prepare something else on my own. So she said, great. That was it. So you get to know people on a restaurant like mine. I'll do all sorts of stuff.
So if you're giving a compliment, the chef's always glad to be interrupted and come out and meet you.
Yeah, they are. I mean, of course, if it's peak season and a Saturday night, they might not be able to. You have to know that if it's 7 o'clock and the dining room's full, maybe that's not the best time to ask to see the chef and to chat because he's probably pretty busy back there. But, you know, if you pick the right time and maybe a weekday, he'll come out and meet with you. And you get to know them, and he gets to know your concerns and your needs. And you got a favorite restaurant, and he's happy to have you.
You've probably had a lot of funny things or strange things happen. What are some of the funniest experiences that you've had?
With customers?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's so many.
Or with staff.
Well, the one we had recently, well, last year was a lady who lost or misplaced her diamond ring towards the end of her meal. And it was, I think it was a weekend, but it was peak season. We were totally packed. And they, you know, of course, it starts out where they're just looking around a little bit, and then they're standing up, and then all four of them are standing, heads under the table, around the table. Then they asked to turn the lights on. We turned the lights on their side of the room, so it's, you know, totally bright, and everybody's eating their meal, watching them. And they say, can you turn the lights down? And this probably went on more than an hour. Ended up where they were actually in the bathroom, because she was in the bathroom. They were taking the sink apart.
Oh, jeez.
They were taking the sink apart, looking for the diamond ring. And the waiters are looking, and the lights are on, and she's totally, you know, freaking out. She's scared. She's bright red. She's panicking. And you know where it was?
No.
It was in her purse.
Oh,
jeez.
She'd
taken it off and had it in her purse. But this is probably after an hour and a half.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that was pretty funny the last time. Other than that, I don't know, there's so many. One time we found a shoe. We were cleaning up the restaurant, vacuuming. We found one shoe. I don't know whatever happened to that shoe. I don't know why somebody would leave with one shoe.
It was a Cinderella story, I'm sure.
Cinderella story, yeah. Yeah. A lot goes on in the restaurant business all the time. I had recently a magazine photo shoot that just came out on a Saturday at 10:30 and meet with them. And I went in there about 9:45, and I went in, and half of my dining room was flooded.
Oh, jeez.
It was about 4 inches of water. And what it was my water filter. Somebody hit one of the pipes that where the water filter is, and it was pouring water out of there.
Mm.
So I go in there, see all the water, and I go, oh, my God. Found out where the leak is, shut the water off, called my carpet guy, and then I took a squeegee and started pushing the water off. And then while I'm doing this, the photographers come in with their cameras. They come in behind me. Oh, hi, are we okay today to shoot? And I said, yep, we'll shoot, fine. Oh, talk about stress.
Well, they could have shot two stories, a disaster story and the restaurant story.
Yeah, yeah. Photographer said, yeah, I know. My dad was in the restaurant business. I know how it is. But all the time there's something going on. Very high-energy business.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Ageless Lifestyles Radio on webtalkradio.net. We're talking with renowned chef Alexander Bernard of Alexander's Restaurant in Naples, Florida. His just-released book is Alexander's Restaurant. Chef Alexander, would you tell us a little about the book?
Yeah. Let's see. I've been in Naples since 1987, 20 years, my third restaurant here in town. We currently have this one for 13 years, and a lot of our customers have been with me since I got here. They've seen my son grow up. He's 14 now. My wife, we've married 15 years, May 16th. So we decided to put a cookbook to celebrate 20 years. It took about 2 years to get our cookbook together. It's coming out any day now. We have about 110 recipes. We took classic recipes, for example, seafood risotto or ossobuco, and we made them where you can make them at home. Took the recipes that all the chefs use in the industry, simplified them so at home you can prepare the dishes. A lot of our cuisine is health conscious. My wife being in the fitness industry, we have little hearts by the healthy choices that are low in sodium, calories, fat, and cholesterol.
Mm-hmm.
And so throughout our lunch menu and our dinner menu, we have all these little heart-conscious recipes that you'll find in the book, too.
So this is a great way to really impress some dinner guests without spending all day in the kitchen.
Yeah, you don't need to spend all day. I give tips on it. A lot of things can be interchanged using different recipes. And you know, you can make some of my dressings and use them on multiple entrees. And again, there's health-conscious items on there.
And it's available or soon to be available at Amazon.com, or are there other sources as well?
Yeah, well, right now it'll be Monica Fitness at AOL.com. We'll send, you know, if you drop us a line, we'll send it up to you, or you're here at the restaurant, or Amazon.com for right now.
Mm-hmm. And that was Monika Fitness.
At AOL.com.
You want to tell us a little bit about the restaurant?
Yeah, we got a nice European-style restaurant, beautiful 70 seats inside. And we got this fantastic courtyard with 40 seats. It's all with bougainvilleas and palm trees and a nice courtyard. We offer lunch Monday through Friday, 11:30 to 2, and dinner 6 nights a week. It's tablecloth. It's continental. Chef-owned and operated, and I'm there all the time. Just finished lunch. And this week we've got 2 charity dinners. We got one tomorrow for the Conservancy, and we have one on Friday for autism. So we always got a lot of things going on. We have wine dinners in November.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully you'll make it down to Naples, Florida, and come see our restaurant.
It's on my to-do list.
Do you ever get down this way?
I was down in Orlando a few months ago, yeah.
Well, I'd like to meet you one day.
Oh, likewise. I'd like to pause to talk about the services of Ageless Lifestyles Institute. Do your coworkers or employees have a youthful, optimistic outlook and good productivity? Or when you go to work, do you feel like you're in a Dilbert or Garfield cartoon? If your company suffers from what I call grumpy old men syndrome, I can help. I can help you and them think, feel, look, and be more youthful. Working in an upbeat, positive, youthful outlook workplace makes a huge difference in how you feel and whether you even want to go to work. Employers also love my speaking and consulting because happier, healthier employees need less sick leave, use fewer health insurance benefits, and are less likely to seek other employment. The change is remarkably easy and inexpensive. Don't settle for grumpy old men or grumpy old women at work. Information and videos are at www.anti-aging-speaker.com. That's anti-aging-speaker.com. The $64 question, how do you eat out at restaurants on a frequent basis, let's say that you're on location or something, without clogging your arteries or without adding the pounds?
Stay away from the butter, or use very little, half a teaspoon if you can do that. Stay away from carbs, your white rice, your mashed potatoes, and any of the, you know, if there's a fish with a beurre blanc, get it on the side. You might not even need it, or just use a little bit. Not have to have the main entree. Don't be afraid to have just appetizers in a salad, or a salad and appetizer, or an appetizer and salad. Or don't be afraid to split an entree. The two of you could go out and split a salad and split an entree and have plenty to eat and not gain any weight. I guarantee if you come into my restaurant, and other ones too, I'm sure. I don't have every chef here in town, but I guarantee you, you can come into my restaurant, eat out every single night, try something different, and not gain any weight. Guaranteed. Money back guarantee.
Wonderful. We'll get that in writing.
No, I believe that. I really do. For example, if you came in and had dinner in tonight and had an appetizer, okay, and you had the black and blue tuna sashimi with seaweed salad and a sesame ginger vinaigrette, very little fat, it's about 3 ounces, 3.5 ounces, you wouldn't gain any weight on that, and you could have organic baby green salad with feta cheese, candied pecans and poached pears with a citrus vanilla bean vinaigrette, very light, very refreshing, touch of cheese on there. And then you could have fish. You could have anywhere from the potato-crusted salmon with braised leeks and red Zinfandel reduction, or the peppercorn-crusted tuna garnished with steamed spinach, miso demi-glace. I don't think you'd gain any weight from having those items. I don't see any fat there, provided you didn't have a big lunch.
No, it sounds terrific. Any tips about ordering fish or shellfish?
Depends what part of the country you are and where you are. In Florida, if you have a reputable restaurant, you're going to have fresh fish. If you're in Oklahoma, you know, you want to go with the trout or something like that. You know, don't get something that's on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't get a fish that's imported from the East Coast. You know, get what's indigenous to that area. You know, you have to be a little smart about that. That's what I would recommend.
It seems like just about every restaurant these days all over the country has salmon. Is that a safe bet, or does it vary a lot?
Well, I mean, things are flown everywhere all the time. If you're in a city and, you know, 3-4-star restaurant, you know, generally, you know, they got it flown in, and, yeah, it's going to be fresh. You know, wild Alaskan salmon's, you know, fresh only part of the year, but then they flash freeze it. So, it's very good all year long. It has to be expensive. If it's something that's inexpensive, then it's not... You know, it's not wild salmon. Wild salmon is expensive. So.
Mm-hmm.
Farm-raised salmon is inexpensive. So they get that all over the country now. And people want it because they think they're eating healthy.
How much difference is there between the farm-raised salmon and the wild-caught salmon?
Well, I think there's quite a bit. Wild-caught fish is much better. You don't have the, you know, the feed that they give farm-raised salmon. They give it the feed, and they're also in the same area where they, you know, where they go, where they poop, you know. So not as healthy as wild salmon.
Mm-hmm.
Like any animal that's wild is not going to have all the antibiotics, all the pesticides, and all that stuff that goes along with it. So I think anytime you get wild fish, you're definitely much better. Are you going to get sick, or are you going to have a problem, or are you not going to get the proper nutrients from having farm-raised fish? I don't think so, but it's definitely healthier to have wild fish because there is chemical farming in a sense.
Oh, well, I've read even the pink color is from a dye.
Yeah, that's what I hear that too. But, you know, the antibiotics that are going into livestock and fish is, you know, it's there, and we all know that. So anytime you can get organic and wild, that's what you want to do, but you will pay, you know, a little bit more for it. But if you want to, you're really serious about your health, what you want to do.
When a vegetarian goes to a restaurant that, unlike yours, you know, isn't particularly known for healthy food, how can they get a good healthy meal?
Like I said earlier, I have items on my menu that's vegetarian, so they have that to choose from. And I would have to say more and more restaurants will continue to have more healthy items on the menu. But otherwise than that, they're going to have to rely on the restaurant's reputation, either by somebody else that they heard from, or ask the server, can the chef prepare something for me, vegetarian, low salt, you know, no fat, and if, hopefully they'll get something that they're happy with. Without a reputation of having that offering, you're going to have to just, you know, go and give it a shot.
Common theme I'm hearing from you is for customers to be assertive about what they want.
Exactly. I think it, you know, I think so. You know, especially in today's market where it's so competitive. You know, if a restaurant is to stay competitive and stay in this business, especially today with the climate, you know, the economic climate, it's, you know, it's the customer's ballgame. Ask what they want, and the restaurant's going to have to deliver, or else you're not coming back. You're going to go elsewhere. And my place, and I'm sure it is with a lot of other restaurants that stay in business, it's no more my way or the highway.
I've always been uncomfortable about sushi. How safe is that?
Again, depends on the you know, a busy sushi restaurant. But, you know, the raw fish, there's parasites in raw fish, so you always take your chance. And it should be stated on the menu that raw fish can be harmful for your health, especially with small children and elderly people and you know, pregnant women. But they're packed. The sushi places are packed. You know, go on a weekend versus a Monday, Tuesday. I could say for sushi, you know, you're busier times on the weekend, and that's when they're getting all the fish in. Versus, I told my son likes sushi, and said, you don't want to go to in Florida. We're really slow here in July and August and September. You know, it's real hot, and yeah, everybody goes up north, and the restaurants are slow. And I said, we don't want to have any sushi on a Wednesday in July down here, because that fish has been probably sitting there a few days. You know? So, My recommendation on sushi, you know, if you're healthy, go ahead, go for it, but go to a place that's known for their sushi.
Which is another common theme I'm getting from you, is go with the restaurants that have the lines, that go with the restaurants with small menus so they have a lot of volume of what they're serving. And something like sushi, go with restaurants that provide a lot of it.
Yeah, that are known for it, and they're, you know, they're busy, and they've got a reputation that for good sushi. You know, and I think you're going to be fine.
So what's it like behind the scenes in the kitchen?
Pretty hectic most of the time. It's pretty hectic. It's fast-paced. It's, you know, to be profitable, you can't be overstaffed. So everybody's very busy. It's a lot of work. Usually you have, you know, a chef like myself, or a chef that you hire, one other qualified chef, and then you have a lot of people there working for you that you've trained, you know, from different countries, or, you know, from America, and a lot of education every day, a lot of prep, a lot of follow through, and then you have the service, which can be very high paced for, you know, 2 hours. It's hard work and it's very hectic, but once you're in it for a while, it's a lot of fun too. I happen to love it. So,
what does the chef spend most of his or her time doing?
I spend most of my time cooking. I prep lunch and I have prepared dinner, and in between that and or different days, I've got other tasks I have to do. If it's going over some invoices with my bookkeeper or my accountant, or calling in payroll, or working with a repair person about the electrical or the ice machine or the walk-in cooler, or talking to a server or a cook that they don't want to work with another person. So it's like this every day, and there's also, you know, advertising, and my wife writes all my menus now. We're always writing menus every week. We have special menu, spa menu, and like she's just finishing up right now the conservancy menu for Wednesday. So, you know, it's constantly something every day, 6 days a week, and then Sunday we're closed. And in the summer we close for a few months to take a breather.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a lot of fun.
Is there something that you could describe, a healthy, delightful dish that we could cook up ourselves?
Yeah, there's so many. On my menu or anything particularly at all?
Whatever maybe your favorite is.
My favorite healthy dish?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess, you know, my favorite healthy dish, boy, you really give it to me. I think if I'm at home and, you know, I want to cook something up, I like sautéed vegetables, a lot of them, all sorts of them, with olive oil and some Cajun spice. And I like to serve, for me, again, I get back with it. You can have it just like that, but I always like a noodle or brown rice served like that. That, for me, is a real good vegetarian meal that you can cook at your house within, 50 minutes at the most. You could buy most of the vegetables already cut, or you chop a few yourself. Green beans, carrots. You have to have definitely first caramelized onions, peppers, and mushrooms, shiitake mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And saute the three of those in olive oil in a nice saute pan. And then you could add little pieces of broccoli, green beans, like I said, some carrots, and maybe some bean sprouts or bok choy. And you can serve it just like that, or you can serve it over some rice or some noodles. That would be something I would suggest.
Sounds great. I'm going to give it a try.
There's so many. There's so many dishes. My wife makes a great seafood soup. She always asks me for a pound of snapper, a pound of crab meat, and like 6 ounces of baby shrimp. And she makes that with onions. She sautés onions, peppers, tomatoes, and I think she uses V8 juice and a can of fish bouillon. And then she puts all that fish in there. And boy, that is excellent. That's an excellent. And a little bit of Tabasco. Yeah, it's excellent, excellent soup. And she makes that like once a month. And it'll last like 3 days in the refrigerator. But that's another good one. That's going to be our next cookbook, by the way.
What, fish?
No, healthy and more easy stuff to cook at home. And a little bit more healthy.
So you're on a roll.
We're on a roll.
Is there any other advice you'd give restaurant customers?
Go to reputable places. Don't be afraid to ask questions to the server, and don't be afraid to look at the menu and ask if the chef can accommodate your dietary needs the way you would like to have them. And I'm sure that 95% of the chefs, the restaurants will. And that's what I would have to say to the customers. You don't have to, the menu's there, but it's not like it used to be where it's set in gold. You'll see more and more restaurants having a little bit more flexibility on their menus, but also have more items on the menus that you can choose from. I really see a real strong trend into healthy food, especially in a market that's where you have smart middle-aged people that are concerned about eating healthy.
It's getting better, and it's getting more consumer-friendly.
I think so, absolutely.
Wonderful. We've been talking with Chef Alexander Bernard of Alexander's Restaurant in Naples, Florida. His just released cookbook is Alexander's Restaurant, which is at Amazon.com, or you can email MonikaFitness@AOL.com. That's M-O-N-I-K-A Fitness@AOL.com. Chef Alexander, thank you so much for being with us and sharing, and I'm delighted to hear the good news that restaurants are getting healthier and more consumer-friendly.
I believe so, especially down here, well, especially my restaurant.
Well, I look forward to visiting sometime. I like to leave my listeners with some baby steps to help you live longer, healthier, and happier. Chef Alexander made it sound so easy that you could eat out at restaurants every day of the week and never gain a pound. Well, it can be easy, but it takes tweaking a few habits, and I'd like to suggest a few baby step habits. First, as Chef Alexander said, skip the butter. Over time, that makes a huge difference. And bread, if it's worth eating, tastes pretty good by itself without the butter. Better yet, skip the bread altogether. Particularly if it's just white bread, it's probably very empty calories. When that bread's actually sitting in front of you, it's awful hard not to reach for it. So the trick is to either ask the waiter or waitress not to bring it, or to bring a substitute instead. The third baby step that I would suggest that helps develop these healthier habits is on salad dressing. They can be loaded with calories. Now, I'm hardly a role model for healthy eating. I struggle with it like most people do. When I started eating salad several years ago, I just started eating the salad, but I never put dressing on it, and that tastes normal to me. Matter of fact, that's the way most of our habits are, is we're used to what we're used to. And if you go for a month or two at the most, eating salads without the dressing, that will start tasting normal and save you 100, maybe 200 calories each time. The thing is, skipping the butter or skipping the bread or skipping the salad dressing, when you do it day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, it's like compound interest. It adds up to many, many pounds and much better health. So my challenge is to take at least one of those three, preferably all three, and develop a new habit, both at home and when you're eating at a restaurant. I've received quite a few emails. One listener asked why I focus on baby steps instead of massive changes. I believe in both, but it's much easier to pull off the baby step. If you think about New Year's resolutions, there are some people who really do keep those massive resolutions of losing weight or getting healthy or working out. But the vast majority of us, they're gone within a few days. But if we take on a very modest goal, like the bread or butter or salad dressing I mentioned, or like taking the stairs instead of the elevator, it's much easier to stick with it and to pull it off and have it become a new habit. Back in the 60s, American engineer Edwards Deming went to the three big automakers in Detroit and tried to persuade them to adopt his system of continuous quality improvement. They had no interest in it because they were into planned obsolescence, in which your car would wear out in about 5 years and you need to buy a new one. Deming took his ideas to Japan, which at the time was known for schlocky goods, cheap junk, much like some of the goods that we get currently from China. Within 10 years, Japan had transformed a lot of its industry to Sony, Nissan, Toyota, and many of the other brand names. Detroit automakers and many of our other industries were frantically playing catch-up and learning quality control. In Japan, Deming is a national hero, and one of the most coveted awards in Japan is the Deming Award. Well, why am I talking about Deming? The same principle applies. When you make little baby step changes, they're like compound interest that keep building on each other. And before you know it, you get massive changes. The massive changes, the kind of changes that, say, Tony Robbins talks about or even evangelists talk about, is doable. Often it requires a crisis, or if not a crisis, then just the right metaphors clicking into place. And what works for one person typically doesn't work for another, so you have to find just the right metaphor that fits with your values and your beliefs. That's a little harder to do on demand. Matter of fact, that's where good coaching comes in. By all means, if you can make big changes, if you can find the right metaphors, go for it. But there's no reason that you can't have the best of both worlds and crank out the baby steps, which gives you that compound interest day after day, month after month, year after year. I also received a couple emails about my interview with Dr. Schneider and his recommendation that the solution to our healthcare system in the United States was to have everybody on Medicare. And the emails asked whether I agreed with his solution. I do agree that Medicare is the most efficient healthcare program that we have in our country. And what I mean by efficient is that its administrative costs are very lean. It doesn't have to spend money on advertising and marketing, and it does such a volume of business that the processing costs are modest compared to private health insurance companies and HMOs. I certainly agree with Dr. Schneider that we need a shift in emphasis from the number of procedures done to the outcome that we should incentivize physicians and other healthcare providers on the basis of outcome rather than procedures. My concern is that when you have the government do something, it inevitably becomes political. One example of politics is what's covered and what isn't. Certainly everyone that wants a healthcare insurance program would say obstetrics should be covered. But should we cover weight loss programs? Should we cover smoking cessation programs? How about getting a massage or joining a health club? Should those be covered under Medicare? What about acupuncture and alternative therapies? Our healthcare system isn't really a healthcare system. It's focused on treating diseases. There's proportionately very little money spent on prevention and wellness. So the effect of having universal healthcare coverage that covers all the usual medical expenses is an emphasis on pills and medical approaches when we know from volumes of research that exercise and nutrition would prevent many, many of the diseases and obviate the need for many of the pills that people take. indeed the Medicare prescription program was a real boon to treating our seniors' problems with pills rather than alternative therapies. For example, if you had a masseuse go into nursing homes and give people a massage once a week, the need for pain pills would probably go down considerably. I also have concerns about the government getting it right. If we look at the No Child Left Behind program, for example, the emphasis is theoretically on outcomes, but very bureaucratized kind of outcomes that aren't really what we had hoped for. While Medicare rates may be favorable for a cardiologist, I notice that in many specialties, doctors and other healthcare providers are reluctant to accept Medicare because of low reimbursement rates. If the government is setting fees rather than the marketplace, supply and demand of good professionals can easily become distorted. One of the alternative approaches comes from Paul Zane Pilser, who suggests that we limit our healthcare insurance to catastrophic illnesses. For example, perhaps the first $4,000 or $5,000 of your healthcare expenses would be out of pocket, and after that, your insurance would pay most or all of it. This has the advantage of giving consumers more choice, putting the incentive on consumers to find the best value, and excising a great deal of the frustration, the bureaucracy, and the huge administrative expense. It also creates a more level playing field in whether to spend your money on treating disease or preventing disease, whether to spend your money on Prozac or taking a yoga course. Most people would protest that most Americans can't afford to come up with $4,000 or $5,000. The difference between $4,000 or $5,000 a month minus what we're already paying out of pocket with copays and deductibles probably isn't any more than most of us are paying for car payments or car maintenance. Certainly our bodies and our health are more important than our cars. I'm very aware that a lot of people do live paycheck to paycheck, and some kind of provisions would have to be made for those situations. By having healthcare limited to large expenses, there would be a huge savings. Many large employers are adopting this approach. Some are passing on the savings to their employees, and some aren't. And finally, we need to make healthcare coverage no longer dependent on whether we have a job, or at least whether we have a job with a particular employer. We need to have it portable, and we need to have it cover people when they're not employed. So in sum, what do I think of Dr. Schneider's healthcare prescription? I think Medicare makes a lot of sense as the provider. His emphasis on outcomes is sorely needed. My biggest concern is that the devil may be in the details and in the political process. I'm always happy to get your comments and questions. Please send them to radio@agelesslifestyles.com. That's radio@agelesslifestyles.com. You're listening to Ageless Lifestyles Radio. Recent podcasts are at webtalkradio.net. That's webtalkradio.net. Look under Ageless Lifestyles and then under the podcast. Older podcasts are available at agelesslifestyles.wordpress.com. That's agelesslifestyles.wordpress.com. This is Dr. Michael Bricky, thanking you for joining us on our quest to live longer, healthier, and happier.